TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI. Trust-based relational intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello and welcome to the TBRI podcast. You're listening to Season 7, Episode 4. On this show, we talk all about trust-based relational intervention, or TBRI. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and today we are discussing one of my personal favorite topics, one of our most requested topics, TBRI camps. Our host, Sarah Mercado, sat down with Brooks Cascella of Raise the Future to talk all about TBRI camps. Brooks is the director of family support services at Raise the Future in Colorado, which is a TBRI ambassador organization. She manages the Family Navigation Program, as well as the statewide post-permanency services and support program. Her work involves preventing reentry into child welfare and supporting families on their path to stability and permanency through multiple facets of service delivery, which all utilize a TBRI lens. She is passionate about TBRI and its potential positive impact for everyone. This involves impact at various levels, including individual, familial, communal, professional, and systemic. She is equally invested in change for one child as well as that of entire systems. And you will hear Brooks' passion in this episode. Brooks is also a TBRI practitioner and TBRI mentor who has used her experience and skills to run many successful TBRI camps. Now, if you are listening in real time, it is currently January of 2024, and you may be thinking to yourself, Emily, why in the world are you talking about TBRI camps in January? There is snow on the ground where I live. It is not summertime, not time for summer camp. Okay, that's totally fair, but as you will hear Brooks explain, successful TBRI camps are all about intentionality and preparation, so it's actually about time to start planning your camp. We actually shuffled a few episodes around so that we could get this interview out as quickly as possible for any TBRI practitioners who may be interested in running camps so that you can use this episode as a resource. We're also linking our previous TBRI camps episode, which features Dr. Casey Call, who works here at KPICD, and also some of our favorite camp resources in the show notes of this episode. So you can check those out in any podcasting app that you use. Friends, thank you so much for listening, and please enjoy this conversation with Sarah and Brooks.
Brooks, welcome to the podcast. I'm so dang excited about this episode.
I am too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I feel like it's only fair, Brooks, to share with our listeners how we initially connected. Do you want to share or do you want me to share?
I could share.
Okay.
So back in the early days, I was becoming a practitioner in April of 2018, and I was a new kid on the block, not the boy band, but at Raise the Future. And I'm sitting there in practitioner training, and I'm absorbing all the amazing information, and I'm watching Sarah Mercado up on that stage. And I had this like body response where it was like, Camp DeSoto, it's Camp DeSoto. I couldn't place it in my brain, but it was my body. And so then I tried to Google her, but from the 80s, there's nothing on Google anymore. And so then I steeled myself in the bathroom and said, I'm going to ask her a really weird question. Just wait till she's alone and she can't be mean because you're in the TBRI world. Walked up to Sarah and she's sitting at the table. And I said, can I ask you a really random question? And she was like, sure. And I was like, did you go to camp in Alabama about 25 years ago? And Sarah stopped everything she was doing and looked up at me and was like, tell me more. And I was like, Camp DeSoto, Mentone, Alabama. So Sarah and I together when we were kids.
Literally summer camp, which for me was, you know, kind of my safe space in the summer and where probably I began the process of learning how to really do relationships in a different way. But it's so fun now to like circle back. And today we're going to talk about our favorite topic, which is camps. And so I'm just so excited. That was literally, it is probably one of the most fun moments of my career because it was bringing like way old days back to new days. And I even appreciated the other day we were talking kind of back and forth about the director and how much she reminds us of Dr. Purvis. And I hadn't made that connection you had. And so I've been in my feels about camps. And so I'm excited to chat about it today. We're going to have fun.
Well, we know that my life goal is to have a camp, so I'm going to have a picture of Aunt Sue and Karen Purvis right there for everybody.
You let me know when the time comes. I might have to negotiate some deeds with the Institute.
Love it.
Let's back up before we get into camps. You're with Raise the Future. What's your role there? And even like maybe let's back even further up and just tell us a little bit about you, where you live, where you work, and what's your role at Raise the Future? And then we'll talk more about the programming.
So I'm currently the Director of Family Support Services at Raise the Future. I've been there for about 6 years. And so that means I oversee all of our statewide TBRI programming and do program development and creation of workshops and all the things. And I also do a lot of our ambassador responsibilities. I started in the field in the late 90s, doing direct service at a children's shelter in Rhode Island and subacute units and residential centers. So, if I've been in the field for 20 plus years, I spent about half of it learning from the kids, boots on the ground. And then I've spent the other half really taking that knowledge and making programs that'll best meet their needs.
So that puts us, it's always fun when you say I've been in the field for 25 years, because that now puts us at a certain age. And I don't know if you remember, but when I was like in my 20 somethings and we go to a conference and the speaker would be like, I've been in the field for 20 years. I'd be like, oh, like a dinosaur. And now I'm like, no, they weren't. They weren't a dinosaur.
I know. I've got as much gray hair as they do
I
now.
know, it's so scary. I just cover mine up. So Raise a Future, you're one of our ambassador orgs, and we'll definitely kind of link some about our ambassador program in the show notes so we don't have to get into those. But how do you guys serve across, like what is your programming? Because you're across Colorado and Nevada
And Utah.
and Utah. I knew that. Randy Naylor's in Utah. So kind of what is your programmatically, what do you guys look like?
We provide TBRI classes, so the caregiver training series. We provide that to bio families, foster, adopt, and kinship families, as well as professionals. So what's unique is that we have all of them in the same room, and so they learn from each other, and it's really dynamic. And then we also do in-home coaching. Because a lot of times that trainer can make things seem so easy. And then you go home and a kid's saying they're not going to go to bed. And you're like, what was that TBRI thing? And so we do that coaching around that. And then also, we're not the end all be all. We don't do everything. So we also provide therapeutic case management to connect families to other resources that they might need. And then we also provide implementation and connection groups that are holistic and family style in certain areas of the state. And we do a lot of professional consultation as well, really because we need to have that common language to serve our families so that we're not confusing them and so that we're giving them real tools. And then out of some of those professional consultations, people are saying, well, wait a minute, I want to do that in my whole school, not just for this one kid. And so then it's kind of turning into some of those like ambassador type conversations. And where we start is just trying to be TBRI wherever we are.
That's so good. It's so good. And we were actually talking to Anna Palmer earlier, and she was kind of talking about that idea of like, you don't have to go for the whole thing right away, right? Like you go for the relationships and the people that are already doing the work, and you just come alongside and TBRI them and how can we support you? We've got this thing. Are you interested? Kind of thing. And I love that. It's been really fun to hear about. Okay, I want to talk about our favorite thing. It's almost
Yay!
summertime. Camps are coming up. People are asking all the questions all over the place. We have obviously a huge heart for camps at the Institute. That is where Dr. Purvis sort of is her learning ground in a lot of ways. So, when did you do your first camp and why did you do it?
My first camp I did in October of 2019 because I had $39,000 I had to spend at the end of a fiscal year. if you want me to be real honest.
Dang. I wonder how many people would be like, how do I get $39,000 for this?
Yeah. But it's this weird funding in nonprofit world where they give you X amount of dollars, but then you don't want to give any dollars back. And so I was left, and they said, I went as, it was my first mentor opportunity because I'm a TBRI mentor as well. So I met some other beautiful mentors in this space in Oklahoma. And in less than 2 months, we planned a camp, and we did that in October of 2019, which I do not recommend to listeners. Do not plan a camp in less than 2 months. That's crazy making.
I was about to ask you that question. So how did it go? How many families?
It was great. We had about 10 families, probably about 20, 25 kids. And it went really well. It was our first one. So we learned a lot about really how to take care of our buddies was one of the biggest things that we learned from that piece. And then how much planning needs to go into it ahead of time. So, so it went really well. Families had a wonderful experience. We had a great team building experience because it's not just me running the camp. It's my entire team. So it went really well, but we definitely learned some things.
So when was the next one?
We
were in 2020.
Yep, we were in pandemic. And so we came out of the pandemic fighting, and we had three camps in 2021. I also do not recommend that. So we had one in June, one in July, and one in August, which was a lot. And then we had our next camp last year in 2023, and we did one camp that summer, and we had lots of time to plan it. And that was really nice.
Okay. So you've done one in 2 months with a whole lot of money. You've done three in 3 months. We haven't talked about the budget. And then you went back and did one. So you've already said you wouldn't do a 2 month planning period, probably unless somebody dropped $39,000 in front of you and said, spend it by this time. What is a reasonable time? Like, am I too late right now to think about a camp for the summer?
I would say no, in terms of planning the activities and so forth. But what I found is the biggest piece is getting that venue reserved. Okay. So finding a venue for camp, I actually reserved it back in, I think I reserved it back in September this time. Okay. And I already, it was slim pickings, because the way we do it in Colorado is we have these two different venues that we love. We've tried them in several, but the families go and they stay there. So I'm also like booking lodging options, and I'm booking meeting rooms, and I'm booking all those kinds of things. And so that would be definitely a note to take, is look at that venue before you even start looking at your TBRI programming, just nuts and bolts. It blows my mind how fast they fill up.
Okay. So venue first, that makes sense, because sometimes you might like find a venue, but it might not, you know, meet all of your hopes and dreams. So you may need to serve fewer families or not do an overnight or make some allowances and space and all that kind of stuff. So that's really good to know. So once you get the venue, how far out? So that can be kind of its own separate thing. But then when do you like have your first meeting or your first thoughts and structuring of what camp is going to look like? How much time do you need?
If you've never done a camp before, I would say give yourself at least 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
For us, we have two camps coming up in the summer of 2024. One is at the beginning of June and one's at the beginning of August. And so basically next week, I'm going to be opening the buddy application.
Okay.
So that's about 4 months. And I wouldn't do it in less than that, because after the venue, you really want to be working on getting your buddies, because you want to be able to be selective, and you don't want to be scrambling, because the number of buddies that you can procure is the number of kids that you can serve.
Right. Okay. So that makes total sense to me. So it's interesting, because all the stuff that I think in our minds is really fun to do, planning the nurture groups and the family training and the snacks and all of that. It's really, we're backing into all of that because we have to have all the right, you know, really, it's like we have to have the empowering principles in place. We have to have the people, we have to have the place, you know. So, well, how do you find buddies? What is a qualification to be a buddy? You network.
I network with people like TCU and other mentors. But really, we find the buddies through our own professional network. So if you go back to what we do for a living, we provide professional consultation as piece of that. And so when people want to get deeper into TBRI and understand what it's really like, the buddy experience is actually really impactful for those professionals that are newer to TBRI, because you're just putting them in this TBRI bubble for 4 days and everything is TBRI. And so we really try to reach out through relationships, because then we know people and we know their level of TBRI. If they don't have any TBRI at all, but somebody on my team knows them and feels like they're a natural to it, we'll get them into a TBRI class. So that's a prerequisite to going to a camp. And then we also have learned to do an online buddy training, because our buddies come from all over the country. So we do like a 3-hour kind of Zoom refresher around TBRI camp expectations. And then my team gets to camp before anybody else. And then the buddies get to camp and they have a day to build their felt safety. Mm-hmm. So that's when we answer their questions. We do another probably like 5-6 hour buddy training. We walk them around the venue so that they feel good about that. And we really highlight things like felt safety, engagement strategies, meeting their needs at breaks so that they're ready to meet those kids' needs.
So I think in your planning, something to consider is that it sounds like you almost need an extra day or two before families ever get there. So when you're looking at your venue, take into consideration that, you know, unless you're just super lucky, you're going to have people traveling in to help support your camp. And so, A, you're going to have a place for them to stay. Probably have to consider in your budget, how much can you afford to support travel? That kind of thing. So that's really good to know. So for buddies, have to be 18, have to be 21.
We say you have to be 18 plus and pass a background check. So we background check everybody that's going to be
in. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I would say on that note, I get the buddies to fly in the night before the families arrive, because as boss of camp, my lid does not come fully down until I have all my buddies there.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the other thing I would say is that I overstaff my small groups. So with the last camp, we had 3 buddies go down on the morning of programming, like on our first morning of full-on programming, and the buddies were there, and one had altitude sickness, one had COVID, one had an eye thing. And so I was down 3 buddies, 7 a.m. on my first full day of camp. But because I had overstaffed my small groups, so I put 2 people and leaders in each of my groups, I was able to pull one of those leaders as a buddy. So I would say that's something I've learned throughout my camps, is give yourself a backup plan, because you never know.
Yeah, you're going to need it. I mean, like you might as well just not even call it a backup plan. It's like part of the plan is that people need to be able to shuffle to meet the needs and do the things. I've even seen, you know, Casey like double down on buddies at the KPICD camps that we have annually. So like one kid that has, you know, really struggling with regulation might end up with 2 buddies for transitions or for, you know, moving around and getting the needs met and all of that. So yeah, you probably can't overdo it unless it becomes cumbersome to the kids to have, you know, what I at our camp, all the kind of non-assigned people wear purple shirts, or you're not assigned to a family specifically. You're kind of overseeing things. You could have too many purple shirts, I guess, but really not.
Like, so they might be needing to wait in the wings instead of
right,
hovering.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it's a proximity thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what is, when you think about just a average budget for a camp, what is, And do you do a weekend camp? Do you do a, how long is your camp?
If mine's 2 half days and 2 full days. So basically if we have a family get there on Thursday afternoon, they check into their lodging, they have dinner, and then we do a scavenger hunt to like build felt safety with the area. The buddies are doing the 5 engagement strategies like maniacs. And then the next day is all day programming Friday, all day programming Saturday. And then Sunday we have a morning to kind of wrap up the memory books and to do that beautiful ritual that's part of all the TBRI camps that lean on me. So we all say lean on me together. And now it broke my brain because I hear it on the radio and I start wanting to do hand signals.
Same. You know, we're like back to back.
Exactly. See, yep. It crosses two lines.
It does me too. I know we could do it right here on Zoom probably.
We won't.
No. I mean, we don't listen. We don't need to show off. We know it. They'll just have to believe us. So budget wise, and I know, like we talk about it when we've done camp trainings in the past that we have like the Pinto all the way up to the Cadillac, right? Like you can do camp in a lot of different ways. And so what type of budget do you guys try to operate within? And then where do you find the money?
I get the Cadillac budget a lot of times, honestly. I'm really grateful. And last year, in 2023, our camp was funded by Medicaid dollars. So I would highly recommend people to look into that. So it was funded by Medicaid. And then previous to that, it's been through program funding that we get through the state of Colorado. And this year, it's going to be funded through the Behavioral Health Administration in Colorado. So I'm lucky I don't have to charge families, but I know that's also an option for people to consider. You can charge families. And the other thing that's unique about mine that gives me that Cadillac budget is that we're lodging the families. Like they're getting an all expense paid family vacation in a TBRI world. That's what they're getting.
Oh man.
So we pay for everything and we're lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah. So when you pick your families, how do you pick them? You know
that's
how many
so hard.
Kids you can have because you've already got your buddies, right?
And we'll take more buddies than necessary, just so that, again, I like backup plans all over the place. I think it's wise to cap your kids at 25. But also, I have broken my own rule and accepted 29 last year. But I think anything more than that, every kid is going to have a buddy. So that's a lot of bodies just in a general space that can be dysregulating. So that's what's hard is that you can serve about 10 or 11 families with 25 kids total. So to pick families, a lot of the ones that we have are already involved in our programming. So they're already know TBRI, they're aware of it, but they're having trouble implementing it, or they just really need to get to that next step. So we see TBRI for them, really get them to that next level of truly gaining that TBRI lens.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you serve families outside of your organization through camp?
We don't. We can't. Yeah. We typically don't because of the funding streams. I mean, if there was a federal funding stream, sure. But like I just described, my Medicaid dollars had certain regions tied to that. So it wasn't even the whole state. My program funding comes from the state of Colorado. It's to serve the state of Colorado families. So we take buddies from out of our organization. But unfortunately, we're not able to take families that are outside of our organization.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense in and of itself, just because you know the families, you're connected to them, they're connected to you. So for ongoing support, in some ways, I think it makes a lot of sense to keep it there. And I know there are other camps that don't, like their organizational structure is different. Maybe they don't serve, like, you know, they're not a child placing agency, or they don't have some of that connection to families, and they can go outside and do things a little differently. But
I'll say it's huge. If you know the families, it's huge because you know. So what we also do with the buddies during that training day before the families get there is they meet with my staff and my staff tell them more about the kids that they're going to be working with, because we don't give our adult buddies kid information before camp. So they come with a lot of questions, but we don't want them to build their own preconceived notions. So that's why we do that. And then they meet with my team. And when my team knows, okay, so-and-so needs a lot of movement. So if we're doing this nurture group and he needs to run, go run. It's okay. And so really, I think it helps mitigate safety concerns for us to know our families.
Yeah. It's a really good point, because I think that sometimes when we're going into an environment like camp where we're going to work with kids, if we know too much, then we can actually misassess the needs of the child, I think. You know, so we are already freaked out and scared, and our lids are flipped before we even get in front of this kid, and they need our lids intact as much as possible. Okay, so for the buddies, you said they get an online training, and then they will have already had some TBRI, or is that part of the online training? And then what about all the other people at camp, right? Like you have to have somebody that's either doing food or showing up with food. You know, I mean, there's supply people, there's people that, you know, are constantly, at least in our camps, they're rearranging the setup of rooms to be ready for the next thing coming in, whether it's a nurture group or a movement group or craft or we're going to outdoor play or whatever. People, it feels like there's a team that's kind of a step ahead of what's going on preparing because, listen, the last thing we need is a whole bunch of kids coming into a room that's not ready for them.
Right.
So what does the whole production look like?
How long do we have? I will say, to go back to what I was saying before, the biggest and hardest work of camp, I think, happens before camp. Camp is actually the production, right? Like the pr camp is the end result almost of all of it. So I have the most amazing team of human beings I've ever gotten to work with. And so we divide up into committees. And so we have, you know, the nurture group committees, we have different small groups. And so we basically have like four different small groups. So we'll have littler, younger kids, and then kind of middle school, and then we'll have teenagers because we serve 0 to 18 at our camps because that's who's in the family's home. And so when I have each of my team are the small group leaders. And then we have the buddies that are volunteers or probably not a part of my team. They're more external. And so my people are helping keeping those train on the tracks. And then typically I'm the boss of camp or the maniac of camp that's really responsible. If somebody loses a water bottle and leaves it on the playground, I go get the water bottle to make sure the kid's not going to get dysregulated. So I kind of run around while they're doing the programming. But then when the families are at lunch, they might set up for the next thing. But that's what's nice to have two of them in each one is because sometimes it can be going so smoothly that you don't need two facilitators. One can be cleaning up that space. So that's how we kind of, because you're right, the last thing you want with that many bodies too, I mean, with the caregivers, the buddies, the small group leaders, and the kids, you've probably got about 90 people. So you don't want them standing around in a room waiting for it to get set up. So that's one of the biggest pieces is the planning behind the scenes. And we just overthink everything because that's what we do. And so we have like bins. So we'll have like day one bin movement, day one nurture group, day one sensory, you know, and so we just have it super organized.
And I think you have to. It's kind of like with it reminds me of the sort of my role in our practitioner trainings is that if we have everything so fine-tuned that it makes it really easy and we don't have to use our brain power to figure out where a crayon is, then we can deal with the real problems when they come up. Right. Like we try to avert every potential problem because, you know, day one, three buddies are out. Now because we don't have to attend to the supplies being easy to locate and find and all of that, I can actually attend to this and not feel like I'm going to, you know, the train's totally going to fall off the track. So I really think it's brilliant to have that level of organization and structure and everybody knows what's going on. It makes it so smooth.
Well, and the other thing
And
is,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, I was just thinking like the small group leaders are also like lid keepers. You know, I think of myself as a lid keeper too, as I'm running around. And so they're watching for signs of dysregulation from the buddies. So the other thing I wanted to point out that's been really helpful is that we have a code word that we teach the buddies. And so what we've used in the past is LaCroix, because we're not fancy. We may be Cadillac, but we're not fancy enough to have LaCroix. And so, you know, so if we can walk by or they can say, I think I need a LaCroix, or I can say, hey, did you need a LaCroix? And then they can kind of tag out and take that space so that we can all stay present. So I
That's
just want to
good.
mention that.
Yeah, I want to ask so we can shift into that direction of kind of what the agenda looks like, and then I also want to chat about what the family experience or the parent experience is like while the kids are doing their thing. But when you think about the agenda, do you have built-in spots where the buddies get breaks?
Absolutely. That was one of the mistakes that we made at our first camp is we had those buddies running. And so what we've learned is they all have breakfast, so the food is at the venue too. That's why I love these venues. It makes it easy for me. And so they have a dining hall, so the families eat breakfast, and then we do the transfer of power after breakfast and go into programming, which that transfer of power is absolutely magic, and it really helps that felt safety. And then they go into programming until about noon. And then we
Hold on,
give
hold on. People are already saying, what's a transfer of power? Will you explain that
that.
really quickly? So I could,
Sure.
go ahead.
Transfer of power basically tells the kid who's in charge of their safety. And so
Okay.
that's in a foreign space, like we can all get excited about camp, but to a kid with tough stuff in their past, that can be wildly dysregulating and overstimulating if they've never been in the woods in Colorado. So the transfer of power really says, can I be the boss of your kid while he's at camp today? Can I give him a hug or high five while he's at camp today? And if he wants bubble gum, can I give him bubble gum? And so we're asking those things directly to the caregiver, and we make sure that the kid is paying attention so that they can hear their caregiver give permission for us to quote unquote be the boss of their kid, which just means I'm going to keep you safe.
Okay, I love that. So everybody does that with every kid.
Yep.
So if I have four kids in my families, we're going to cycle through each one. And, if there's two parents, then, they can divide it up. But each kid has the experience of the transfer of power.
Usually, but honestly, I've kind of shared power with that one. And the last camp, there was a family that made a transfer of power cheer.
Oh, okay.
So they did it all
So
together,
that's a
but they were all
ritual.
paying attention. It was a ritual. It meant something to them. And they were like, Brooks, you got to see what we're doing. And they made it their own, which is what we
Yeah,
say about
that's what we want.
TBRI. You
And they
know?
can go home and do that, right? Like they've made something unique to their family. That's awesome. Okay, so I apologize. I interrupted you. Transfer of power, and then
They do, caregivers go to their space. Buddies and kids are doing the programming that we have for the schedule. And then right around noon, we break for lunch. And that's when the buddies get a 2-hour break. And they
Ooh.
love the 2-hour break because and so my team is still on. So the families have lunch, the kids have lunch with their caregivers. And then we do a family activity, which has just become quite beautiful. So we get to like just let them have some decompression time as a family in the middle of the day, and we get to model TBRI principles, and they get to use things that they've learned and tell their parents what they've learned. And then we go back online at 2. And so at 2 o'clock, then we do the transfer of power again. And then the buddies are back on, the caregivers are in their space. And then at like 5 o'clock, right before dinner, we do the transfer of power back, and I do not take care of children overnight. So they are their caregivers,
Yeah, they
overnight.
go back to the caregivers. Do the buddies eat with the families?
It's an option. It's not a requirement. So sometimes they make such, I mean, it's amazing in, what did I say, 2 full days and 2 half days, the level of connection and change that you can make in, 3 days is unbelievable.
It's
And
wild,
so
yeah.
sometimes they are eating lunch with their kids, and then sometimes they're not. It just depends on what the dynamic is.
Okay, so what are, when you say the parents go to their thing, what are they doing?
Our parents have already had TBRI, which I know is not typical of every camp. So some camps will do the caregiver series during that time. But for us, we've actually built in a couple of activities from Cindy Lee's Making Sense of Your Worth. So there's a couple of those that we to look at their own history and their own mindfulness there. And then we kind of go deeper on some TBRI concepts. We do nurture groups with them. And I would say one of the biggest pieces that they get is the sense of community, because every care, most, I want to say every, but I'll say most caregivers that we serve feel like they're on an island and they're the only people whose kids get kicked out of school or they get calls from the cops or whatever. And so that's honestly programming, like that's the most impactful thing for them is for them to be able to connect with each other and also to know that their kids are safe while they're doing that. Because these are families that are not able to send their kids to typical summer camps because of their behaviors and so forth. So that's kind of how the programming goes. And then the second afternoon of the full day, we actually give them respite.
And so they get to do whatever they want for 3 hours. And that's part of our programming.
Yeah.
And so they get to do that. And then the last day of camp, that morning that we work on the memory books, we kind of take the kids through a crash and bump circuit. And we let the parents observe and ask questions so that they can really kind of have some of that TBRI transfer of knowledge.
Yeah, it's so good. One of the things that I get to do in my job that I love, and I should just hope and pray that Casey keeps letting me do it, but I get to do the parent training at our camps. And for me, it's fascinating. So our camp is 2 weekends, and they stay like in an Airbnb or a hotel nearby campus, so we don't have them overnight. But on Friday night when they get there, it's like, I think the parents are more freaked out than the kids. They're right. Like, you've literally like flown into Texas because you don't know what to do. Like, they're exhausted. They're trying so hard. They're alienated. They're frustrated. And we literally just let them, we like go around and do introductions. And then we ask them in their introductions to share the challenging behaviors, and we write them on the board. And it's like this massive list. And sometimes I think this might be the first time that they've literally just bleh, like, and let it all out. But the most pivotal part of it is not that they're allowed to do that, which is important, but it's that nobody in the room is surprised. They're all like, you too? Oh my gosh. And all of a sudden, these families who have been alienated because of their kids' histories and their dysregulation and the behavior that, you know, stems from that, are all of a sudden in a community, and it is life-changing for them. And nobody comes to get them other than to change a diaper, right?
Yeah.
Like, so some of those things, and that's really by the parents' choice. We'll, you know, have, you know, adults that are, you know, we put all the safety protocols in and stuff for, you know, changing diapers and stuff. But most parents, if they choose to, we'll come get them to change the diaper or whatever, but we never pull them out of training. Never.
No. And that's, like, you're reminding me, so I've learned for the caregivers felt safety. When we first split up for that full day of programming, they're kind of looking at us wide-eyed, like, okay. And so I've learned, as I'm kind of the tether to the caregivers. So what I've learned is to go over there after everybody's situated in their groups and to go back and tell them everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first open that door, I get everybody looking at me like, are you about to tell me about my kid? And I can see it and feel it when I say, everybody's fine, guys.
Oh, and it's like,
everybody's fine. And everybody just kind of comes back down.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a family that said, well, we always get kicked out of anywhere in less than 2 hours. So I just figured that we were going to get kicked out of camp.
So soon.
And that, right? And then
so
I
sad.
Had another caregiver this past camp. She came up to me at the end and she said, I came to camp because I wanted you to help my girls, but I didn't know that you were going to help me too.
Yep. Yep. And it's, I mean, I can't explain, like, for part of me, like, there's a lot of grief and moving to my role at the Institute, because you're no longer near kids and families. I mean, I was thrilled, so I don't want that to be lost, but there is something about, like, no longer being around the kids and families, and that just nourishes your soul to be around them. And so the camp does that for me, but like the relief that these families get, and then, like, you can see their fear at the end of the second weekend when they're like, wait a second, we're not coming back, because it has been the first time for many of them since they've had their kids that they haven't been kicked out of somewhere, that they haven't been left to deal with it on their own, that they've actually gotten some answers, or gotten, we don't know, but we'll find out, right? That kind of stuff. And I just have to share with you one of our most fun things. Leah Gillum and I do the parent training together. We got an email from this past summer from some of the moms from the year before, and the dads went on a dad's road trip, like, from 3 different legs of the country. I mean, they were literally thousands of miles apart, and they got together to do a road trip, and it's because they found their people, because they're fighting the same battles, right?
Yes, I actually had all the dads individually, so it's not like they planned it, I don't think, come up to me after one of our camps in 2021 and say, I don't usually feel so involved in what's going on for my kid. The dads had a text string to go to local breweries. It wasn't even the moms. Yeah, no, it was the dads.
So
that were like,
good.
We had to stay connected. And it was so cool.
Yeah. Dads need that too. I mean, we all need it, right? Like, we all need our people. I mean, this is hard. But putting on a camp is hard. Parenting kids, this is all hard, what's happening here. Any roadblocks that you would warn people against that you've already survived or figured out?
Venues. Get your venue early. Okay. Don't just assume that it's going to come out of the woodworks. Like, start planning that, even though that's not the most fun thing to plan. I would say buddies. Like, I overstaff so that you can take care of a buddy emergency at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And take care of your buddies. That was some mm-hmm. of the biggest feedback that we got, is that they're like, wow, we thought we were going to TBRI the kids, but we didn't know you were going to TBRI us. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a piece. And then take care of your own needs. So mm-hmm. before camp, so my team knows every single box and label and agenda before we go into camp. They know mm-hmm. that camp is not, I hate to not sound TBRI, but it's not the space for their needs, right? Like mm-hmm. we need to be dumping in. We need to be ready to dump into everybody else. Mm-hmm. So I would say those are the roadblocks.
Well, and you can probably do that because you spend all that time pouring into them, right? Mm-hmm. So they, so really you're role modeling it. So they know and have felt, you know, I mean, you're TBRIing them before they get to camp and they're pouring that back in. And then you guys all have to gather and replenish each other when you yeah. get back, because it's a real deal. You know, I thought yeah. something interesting that Casey did, and maybe she did it the last few years, but, you know, my brain only operates on a very small time frame. But during it, we did a couple of Zoom, you know, meetings before our camp where everybody kind of got to know each other, and she did the training piece and all that. But one of the intros that she, you know, Casey likes a check-in question. And she asked everybody, like, what's your favorite salty candy? What's your favorite sweet candy? And then lo and behold, in the kind of the buddy break room, literally everybody's favorite salty and sweet snack, not candy, but snack was in there for them both weekends, right? Coolers full of water and sodas yep. and probably LaCroix. but you know what I mean? Like yeah. it is true though. Like, you have to be so intentional, because the work of the buddies is exhausting in a million different ways. And so yep. taking care of them is important. Okay. How have you keep doing it? So are the outcomes good?
Oh, the outcomes are amazing. I yeah. love it. Camp yeah. is probably my favorite professional experience. And I have to say professional uh-huh. in case my family listens to this. So, but camp is just the best. The outcomes are great. You know, we had a kid, talk about safety. We heard from a dad who said that on his way home from camp, his kid said, "That's the safest I've ever felt in my life." And the dad said, "I know, I'm going to make myself cry." And the dad said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I knew that every grown-up there would help me if I needed it."
Oh, come on.
I know. And like, that's why I love camp, is like, I can't believe these families trust us so much to give us their hearts mm-hmm. and their babies. And I just, that means so much to us. And mm-hmm. I can remember standing next to a mom, and I'm like, "Look at your kid." Like, he was making his first friend in his life, Sarah. And he was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And she's just crying, watching her kid make a friend. And it's these things that we take for granted that we don't realize these kids don't get. And yeah. it just blows my mind.
It's really heartbreaking. And I think, like, I think camp is one of those places where every single person that participates in camp, whether you're the camp boss or a buddy or a camper or a parent or catering, I think everybody would argue that all of their lives were changed the most.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it, the buddies are, we're all different at the end of it, right? Like, it just is, it is just phenomenal. I think for yeah. a kid to be able to express that this is the safest I've ever been, and like cognitively to be able to recognize that and put all of the pieces together is just phenomenal. Oh, just phenomenal.
That's why we're doing it. That's why we're here, right?
That's why we do it. Brooks, I could talk all day. Thank you for being here. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and your experience and the joy of camp with me personally, because, you know, it's my favorite. This has been so much fun.
I've absolutely loved it. Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. I always love talking to you.
Absolutely. Same.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.